Welcome to the Bridges Community Church Sermon Podcast. Today, Pastor Nate tackles the question, why does God allow pain and suffering? Later, he introduces Sandra, who tells us about her life of health complications and how even through that, she was able to see God's glory.
There we go. When the green light's on, it makes noise. Welcome. My name's Nate. I'm one of the pastors here, and we are in this series called Explore God. As you guys can see already, these are tough questions, aren't they? These are not easy questions, because I think the challenge with this question in particular is every one of us has gone through pain, right? It doesn't matter if you're rich or poor, whether you're old or young. We've all experienced something in our life that's painful, something that causes suffering. And so we're going to engage in this topic this morning, but I do want to just say this, that this is a hard conversation. And if you're here and it's striking you emotionally, just keep engaging. We want to have this conversation together. We've got our discussion groups, our life groups are happening throughout the week. And if you need a place just to pop in, even just for a couple of weeks to kind of process through these questions, get on our website and join one of those sites. We'd love to connect with you in that way. And also, if you are new with us, we're just super grateful you're here. Right after service, we've got a welcome lunch. So feel free, even if you've been here for a little bit and you're like, man, I don't really know anybody yet and I want to connect, please head over to the welcome lunch. We'd love to get to know you a little bit. And it's going to be in the cafe right after service, okay? So we're in this series, Where is God, or this topic, Where is God in the Midst of Pain and Suffering? And I was processing this week, like, when did I first wrestle with this question? When did I first kind of realize that this world was painful, like more than just stubbing a toe? And I was reminded of this time that I was 16 years old, and my best friend at the time, we were out hanging out in downtown Salem, right? There was like this little kind of area that all the teenagers from all over town, we used to cruise the gut. Anybody here? Man, I feel like an old man. Cruising the gut. Like I'm from the Greasers movie or whatever. But we used to cruise. There was like a 6 or 7 block kind of route that we would cruise around. And I was in one car and my buddy was in the other car. And we were just sort of making laps. And we'd stop every once in a while and try to meet people and, you know, harass pedestrians or whatever that we were doing. And at some point in the night, I got separated from my friend. And my night was going great. I met some new people. I was having a good time, and everything was going great. And this is like pre-cell phone days, so I couldn't just text him and be like, hey, where you at? Like, if you lost somebody, they were gone forever, right? So a couple hours later go by, and we meet up at this place, and I find him, and he was unresponsive. And I found out that he had tried to overdose on painkillers. And so we called 911, and the ambulance came, and we rushed him to the hospital. And I remember sitting there in the waiting room as they were pumping his stomach. And my friend had been going through some really difficult things. He had kind of been left by his family. And then that particular night, he broke up with his girlfriend and was angry and was driving fast and got another speeding ticket. And so he was afraid that he was going to lose his license. And he just felt like he just couldn't handle all the pain and suffering in the world. And I remember he came back, he recovered and he was fine. And in the coming days and weeks, I would talk with him and I would try to like rationalize what he was going through, right? I tried to explain, no, man, it's all good. Everything's going to work out. Just, you got to be positive. This is no big deal. And I think as I was sharing that with my friend, I was trying to myself as a 16-year-old person, try to understand, how is this fair? How is this right? How is it that he goes through so much pain and suffering to the point where he can't even fathom his life going on? Now, I don't know what your story is. I don't know what the suffering that you're facing. But I know that this conversation is not just a philosophical conversation, right? This isn't just some intellectual conversation that we're talking about. This is real life stuff. And everyone in here, you've gone through something. Maybe it was as a young child watching one of your parents walk out of the house and not come back again. Maybe it's just those pain of being a young kid in school, being bullied, and maybe some of the abuse, even the racism and stuff that you face as a child. Maybe it's as you got a little bit older, that tragic failure you had. Maybe that job that you were so excited about that you lost, or that marriage that you had that fell apart. Maybe it's a diagnosis that you received that's tragic. In fact, if we were to kind of do some sort of raise a hand thing, if you've ever had one of these experiences, it wouldn't take long before all of our hands were up, right? And it doesn't mean that all of our pain is equal. I think part of even the injustice of our world is pain affects different people differently, and some people experience more pain than others, and it's not fairly distributed, but this is something we can all connect to. So I do want to say this, though, as we have this conversation, this is us trying to ask these big, important questions. This is probably not the answer to yourself or to your friend who's in the midst of a tragedy, right? These are us trying to get our head around it. And sometimes when we're in the midst of a crisis, we're in the midst of deep pain and suffering, what we need is not somebody to sit down and to give us a bunch of answers and to try to make it all logically make sense. What we probably need is somebody just to sit down and to listen. It's probably what my friend needed back so many years ago, right? So if you're here and you're feeling that, we want you to know that this is a place where you can just be and be listened to. We want to create that environment, and we want to be that kind of church that deeply cares about each other enough to just sit in the discomfort of pain and listen and to be with each other. But to answer this question, why, where is God in the midst of pain and suffering? I think we first have to start with the question of, okay, why does pain and suffering even exist? Like, what is exactly happening? What's going on with this pain and suffering? And I think to answer that question, we have to go back to the beginning, because pain and suffering is, as long as we have history, as long as we have records, there's been pain and suffering in the world. So to go back to the beginning, and the Bible paints a picture of where pain and suffering began. Right, in the book of Genesis, the very beginning of the Bible, the very first chapter describes God creating the heavens and the earth, creating all things. And at the end of that, in Genesis 1:31, God kind of gets done with everything, and he gets done creating humans. And it says that God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And there was evening and there was morning on the sixth day. So at least the Bible's understanding of creation is God created everything, and it was good, and it was perfect, and it was right. And then in chapter 2 of Genesis, it begins to describe this garden, this beautiful kind of place, right? And in this garden, you had like kind of, even just the picture garden, right? You can just sort of imagine like this place of the natural world and beauty and kind of tranquility. And in the midst of this garden are these two perfect human beings. And these two beings, these two humans, they're in this garden, and there's no sin, there's no lying, there's no manipulation. Even the imagery that we get is that they are unclothed, they're naked in the garden. Right, so it's to give us this picture that they're not even ashamed of themselves, their bodies. Like, they're just in perfect honesty and connection with each other. And they were given this task. They were to be caretakers. They were like docents of God's creation, right? So they're in the midst of this beautiful environment that God had created, and they were there to care for it. And so they were interacting in harmony in this very good space with all creation of God. And even then, there's this image of them walking with God in the morning. Like, every day, it kind of seems like God would show up and they would just go for these walks in the cool of the early morning. It's kind of a beautiful picture, isn't it? Like, who doesn't want naked walks in the garden, right? That's okay, maybe I'm taking the wrong thing out of it, okay? Definitely no poison oak free fall, I'm pretty sure. But here's this perfect place, right? And I think a word that we sometimes use is the word utopia. But that sounds, it kind of seems cheap to me. I don't know why. Like, it seems like a mystical thing. Like, but it's this perfect place. It's this very good place. And humanity is kicking it in perfect relationship with each other, with the natural world, and with God. So what happened? And I think part of that comes back to the fact that why God created humanity in the first place. God created us to be his family, to be in relationship with him, to be loved by him and to love him in return. And God doesn't want forced children in his family, right? He doesn't want Stockholm syndrome kind of kidnapped family members. And so God says, I'm going to create you, and I'm going to create you with the ability to choose me or to not choose me. You're going to have the option. You can choose to live this life that I have called for you that is perfect and is good and is harmonious. And it is this amazing spot where you can choose your own path. And humanity collectively, individually through Adam, but collectively through all, we said, no, I'm cool. I think I got a better plan than you have. You know, I see what you're doing here. I see this idea. But if we just tweaked a couple of things, I think we could make it better. It's like an elementary school kid who's like a future engineer, but they're 8, right? So they're not an engineer yet. And you give them like a remote control car, and they take that remote control car and they play with it for a little bit. And after a little bit, they're like, you know what? I could make this faster than the engineers at the toy store, right? I could make this turn and be better. And so they tear the whole car apart to try to upgrade it, and then it never goes back together. Have you ever done that yourself, maybe as a kid, or watched your own kids do that? I think that's kind of what we did with creation. We said, I think I can make it better. You know, if I knew, if I was kind of in control, if I could see right and wrong, and if I could just kind of make it my own way. And with that, sin entered the world. And our way wasn't good, and our way wasn't better. In fact, our way was evil. Romans 5:12, later on in the Bible, it says this. It says, therefore, just as sin came into the world through one man, and death through sin, so death spread to all men because of sin. So it doesn't take long, right? We come into the garden. We're in the garden. We begin to sin, and we get evicted from the garden. Right, this place where we're in perfect relationship with God, since God is perfect and God is pure, and we are no longer pure and right, that relationship is severed, it's broken. And now all of a sudden, humanity is starting to clash with each other, and within a generation, you have Adam and Eve's kids killing each other, right? And then you think of our relationship with the natural world and how much we have jacked up the natural world, right? Every place humans go, we make it less beautiful. Right? Isn't that true? We can't touch anything without jacking it up. And so the picture we see here is that sin enters the world, that evil enters the world, and the natural byproduct of that evil is pain and suffering. They come hand in hand. It's like if I was to touch a hot stove, right? And I was to touch a hot stove and go, ooh, I feel pain. Right? Well, why do I feel pain? Because there's something hot on that stove, right? The pain is just an indication that stove is hot. And I think the pain and suffering we experience is an indication that we live in a broken, fallen world, a world that is not right. So this kind of explains why we experience the world we experience. Right? Why is it that we live in a world where pain exists? And I think pain exists because it's the natural outcome of a world that has been broken and polluted by human sinfulness. This is the reality of the world we live in. We live in a jacked up world because we are jacked up people, and we do jacked up things, and we hurt each other, and we destroy things, and we break things. And the reality of it is, the consequence of that is that we feel pain and suffering because of the world that we created. So now, where's God in the midst of all this? Last week we talked about, is there a God? And we said, it seems like there's a God. Because when we look out into creation, we see that there's this design, this beauty of creation, the fact that their stars are stretched out in perfect distance from each other, and even like the distance is beyond our fathom, but it all works together, and then internally we work together in this intricate way, and that must speak to a God who created all this, who must be all-powerful. And then we also said that we believe that there's a God who must be morally good, because we see in like the hearts of humanity that we have this sense of morality, this sense of right and wrong. We don't all necessarily agree on what it is, but there's this sense of morality within us, and that must come from a God who is good. And this puts us in a challenging place, right? So if there's a God who is all powerful and there is a God who is good, then why would he allow the suffering to continue in our world? That's a valid question. It's a hard question. And again, it's an emotional question. So let's ask it. Why does God allow pain and suffering? There's a story in the Bible. It's actually a whole book. It's called the Book of Job. You might have thought it was the Book of Job. That is a different book. The book of Job, and we like to talk about Job, and we really focus usually on the first two chapters of Job. Basically, Job, in the first two chapters, experiences an incredible amount of loss. Like, within a matter of those two, like, pages, he loses all of his possessions, he loses his children, and he loses his health. And then the next, like, 38 chapters of the book is really this dialogue between Job and his buddies. And it's interesting because Job's buddies are like, listen, Job, you're going through all this hard stuff because there is a God who is all powerful and all good. Therefore, if you're suffering, it's because you are not good and God is punishing you. That was their rationale. And Job's response to his buddies is like, no. There's a God who's all power and all good, and he made a mistake with me. That's kind of what Job is saying. Like, something's wrong. Like, I'm not a bad person. Like, something's not right here. Like, if that's not what's going on. And it's interesting because God's kind of listening in on this conversation. And we sort of would expect, if I was writing the story, I would expect God to come in and just answer and sort of set everything right, to just give this clear explanation of where's God in the midst of pain and suffering. And that would make sense in my mind. But that's not what God does. God comes back to Job and his friends, and he just starts asking them a string of questions. It's like, yo, where were you when I created the world? You know, when I stretched out the stars across the sky, when I spaced them out all perfectly, what were you up to? You know, when I designed all the animals, all the creatures, all the things of this world, when I put that all together perfectly, what was it you were doing at that point in time? And there's like two chapters of just question after question after question. And you're kind of like, whoa, God, take it easy. Why are you being so harsh on Job? He's going through so much. But actually, Job gets it. And I think the point God was trying to make with Job is this, that I have a plan, and it's good and it's reasonable, but you don't always know my reasons. Think about that for a second. Do we believe that God is in control? That God has a plan, that God is reasonable, even if I don't fully understand all of his reasons. And I think that's a humble and important place for us to be, especially when we're having this conversation, because sometimes I think we're quick to like fill in all the details. We're quick to say, well, this natural disaster happened because of this thing, and this piece happened because of that thing, and this is how it all fits together. And what I think God was saying is, yo, put the brakes on. I got this. Do you believe me? Do you trust that I know what I'm doing? And it's interesting. Job, he gets it. And check out what he says. If you want to open your Bibles, by the way, they're not going to be on the screen. So it's in Job 42. That's right kind of in the middle of the Bible, or you can find it on an app or whatever you might look at. But look it up. That way you know I'm not making stuff up. Because I might. No, I'm not. Fact check me, though. All right, it says this. Job 42, 2-3. This is Job responding to God after God has just asked him all these questions. He says, I know you can do all things, and that no purpose of yours can be thwarted. Who is it that hides counsel without knowledge? Therefore, I have uttered what I do not understand, things too wonderful for me, which I do not know. Again, I think there's some honesty in this. Job's going, all right, I don't get it, but you're right. If you can create all of this creation, if you purposely and perfectly designed me the way I work and all the way I work together, if you designed all that I see around me, I'm going to trust you. I know that your plans cannot be thwarted. They cannot be overcome. They cannot be knocked out. And also, I recognize that maybe you're doing things that are too wonderful for me to understand. Now listen, this is not us intellectually trying to shortcut this conversation. It's not us saying, ah, it's too big, we can't understand it, so just don't try. That's not at all what Job is saying here. What I think it is saying is there's gonna come times where we hit the limits of what we can understand, what we can factor, what we can put all together, and in that moment, I'm gonna trust God. I'm gonna know that he's in control. So that again, it's still though, it doesn't answer the question, what is God doing? Why does God allow pain and suffering? And as I've been wrestling with this, this has been probably the hardest message I've ever prepped. Like it just has all week, it's just been eating at me because it's so real and it speaks to this place that's difficult to even put into words sometimes, right? And I just kept writing and different things and this is why and all that. I've kind of come down to this one point that at least to me makes sense. I think pain and suffering, it causes dissatisfaction with the status quo. It leads us to explore God and to find hope. Let me say that again. Pain and suffering, it causes dissatisfaction with the status quo. It leads us to explore God and find hope. Let's kind of, let me read another verse that I think sort of fleshes this out a little bit. This is found in Romans chapter 8, starting in verse 18. So if you want to turn this is Romans 8, 18 to 25. And it says some similar things to kind of what we see in the book of Job. It talks about the pain and suffering as a reality of our world. It says this, for I consider that the suffering of this present time are not worth comparing to the glory that is to be revealed to us. For the creation awaits with eager longing for the revealing of the sons of God. For creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be set free from its bondage to corruption and will obtain the freedom of the glory of the children of God. For we know that the whole of creation has been groaning together in pains of childbirth until now. And not only the creation, but we ourselves, who are the first fruits of the Spirit, we groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for adoptions as sons, the redemption of our body. For in this hope we were saved. Now, hope that is seen is not hope, for who hopes for what he sees? But if we hope for what we do not see, we wait for it patiently. There's a lot going on in this verse, isn't there? I see and I read that we're not alone, right? There's something universally broken in our world. And all of creation, it groans. It sees a dissatisfaction with the way things are. There's very few people, I think, that would look at our world and say, no, everything's great, it's easy, it's perfect, right? Even the animals, it's sort of described as groaning under the weight of this. And it uses this term, the pains of childbirth. That's a vivid description. Like my family, we like to go to the hospital from time to time. We're big fans of the ER. We break things and cut things and get hurt. And we've been to the hospital quite a bit. And yet there is something acute about the pain of childbirth. And I've never been through it, obviously, but I've observed it. And it's different, right? Like when I broke my leg or when something happens, there's something deeply painful about that. But it's also different. Like when I broke my leg, my greatest hope was just that my leg would not hurt anymore. You know what I'm saying? That I'd be able to walk again, right? But the pains of childbirth, they come with this sense of hope and anticipation, right? There's this hope like, yes, this hurts and it's a lot, but on the other end of this, I'm gonna have this child. I'm gonna have this life to hold in my hand. That's why people have multiple kids, right? They keep, well, other reasons too. But we choose to have kids. We choose to go through that pain because we know that on the other end of that pain, there's something hopeful. There's something exciting. But again, it starts with a dissatisfaction with the status quo. I was laying in bed the other morning with Isabel, my youngest, and we're just kind of hanging out. And she has this little aquarium with these two like goldfish in there. And we bought them. They were like those 10-cent goldfish. And we're like, cool, these would be the perfect pet. They'll last for 3 months and then we'll be done with them. 4 years later, these goldfish, we've been feeding them, cleaning up after them, right? And I'm laying in bed, and I've never seen this before, but I watched one of those goldfish have a stroke. It was weird. I'm like, all of a sudden it's swimming, it like does something, and boom, right to the bottom of the tank. And like, I'm a little callous to this world, right? I'm like, all right, let's get but it was still breathing, so I'm like, we'll leave it. Okay, my 8-year-old daughter is not callous to the world. She saw that. And she didn't even think about these. She never even looks at these stupid goldfish. They're just in her room taking up space. But she saw it, and there was a part of her that was like broken. It was sad. This 10-cent goldfish that shouldn't have lived 3 months, like she saw the pain and the suffering, and she loved it. And the fact that it was still breathing, it hurt her. And I think that speaks to this dissatisfaction with the world. I think there's something about that pain, as hard as it is, that we need in our life. And I think it pushes us to explore for something different, to look for something, to find hope, right? That's what it says in here. It says, for all creation was subjected to the futility, but not willingly, but because of him who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself would be set free from his bondage to corruption and obtain the freedom of glory of the children of God. So it's this idea that we're in this moment and we're dissatisfied. There's dissatisfaction with the pain and the suffering, and it causes us to go, is there something more to this life? Is this as good as life gets? Or is God at work doing something? It's like those indicator lights that pop up on your dash on your car from time to time. Any of you guys have one of those on in your car? My car may or may not have one. I think both of our cars do right now. Don't worry about it. No, but why do those little indicator lights pop up on your car? They pop up to say something's wrong, right? And the other day, one popped up on Becca's car, and I had the thought of like, well, just put tape over it. You'll never see it. Like, I don't see what the problem is. Like, it's just, no, but like, if all of a sudden you got one of those and you don't have oil in your engine, or one of your tires doesn't have air in it, and you're just driving along and you don't stop to get it fixed, the consequences could be catastrophic, right? What if this burden, this longing, is an indication given to us from God to explore for God, to seek hope, to seek purpose, to seek meaning in our lives? And what if not only is it this drawing, this indication, but what if there actually was hope? What if all this pain and suffering is causing me to see the brokenness of the world and seek something that is better, something that is true, something that is redeemed? See, we talk about what happened at the beginning of time in the garden, that we were separated from God. But what if we were created to be an eternal relationship with God? And what if the consequences of our sinfulness had eternal consequences? What if the problem wasn't just the pain and suffering of this life, but what if the outcome could be a future separated from God? Job, he says, okay, God, I get it. I know you got plans, and I know your plans cannot be thwarted. Okay, that's a weird word, isn't it? Thwart. I've never used the word thwart in a sentence. Right, but I know your plans will never be overcome. You're never gonna nobody's gonna stop your plans. So think about that in the context of sin. Sin has disrupted the plan of God to be in perfect kind of unity with him. But our sin didn't thwart the plans of God. God knew our sin. He knew our actions, and so he sent Jesus into the world. And think about this, Jesus did not come into the world to avoid suffering. He came in and he faced all the sufferings of this world. He was abused, he was ridiculed, he was betrayed, all these different things were thrown onto him. And he took it all intentionally. In fact, he even went to the cross, taking on the sin and the shame of humanity. He died on the cross and he rose from the dead, conquering death. And we're going to talk about that more in the next weeks and explore, is that true? Is that a possibility? But I just want to, for right now, I want to just put this out there. If that narrative is true, the narrative we see throughout Scripture, then what it teaches us is that all who believe in him, all who put our faith in him, that when he returns to this earth, we will be resurrected from the dead. We will be given new life and we will spend eternity free from our sin, free from our brokenness, free from our pain, free from our suffering, united with him. And it doesn't make this question any easier, but I do wonder this. If I never felt pain and suffering in this world, would I even question the status quo? Would I question my own sinfulness? Would I question the destructiveness of my actions? Would I search for God? Would I find hope in Jesus? One of the verses here, it says, in Romans, it says, "For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worth comparing to the glory that is to be revealed in us." This is hopeful, isn't it? He's like, dude, yeah, it's tough right now. You're in pain. I see it. I'm in pain. This world is broken. It is not right. But think about this. How glorious is it going to be when it's revealed to us the face of God? That perfect relationship with him. See, I think the kind of final point here, something to think about, is I think oftentimes what we desire is pain relief, right? But what God wants to do is redemption. So the question I think for us is, what are we looking for? Are we searching for God? Are we looking for him, for our hope, and for our redemption? Now this story, this conversation, it's challenging, and I think it's a bit abstract. So I think it would be helpful to kind of talk about it in a real life example. So after the service last week, Sandra, if you want to come on up, Sandra came to me and she just said, "Hey, I really feel led to share my story, my struggle with pain and suffering," and so. We've invited her. Thank you for coming and sharing a little bit about your story. So, do you mind just sharing with us kind of the journey you've been on in your life and how you've explored God and found hope?
Yes, definitely. And thank you, Nate, for, giving me a chance to share. My name is Sandra Fagetti, and I would like to share with you my discovery of God through pain and suffering. I was ill a lot as a child and regularly had unexplained stiff necks and leg pain. I was raised in a family that went to church every Sunday and we learned about God. Unfortunately, expression of emotion was greatly discouraged, leaving me detached from my emotions. In late high school, I started having anxiety, which led to me deciding to trust Jesus for direction with my life. It was the pain that drew me to him. A month later, I found out I was accepted to UC Berkeley. Sounds great, right? In college, I quickly realized I was way over my head as I experienced increasing anxiety, sleeplessness, and back pain God deepened my dependence on him through studying the Bible with other young Christian men and women. This is where I met my amazing husband of 36 years, John. 2 months before John and I would get married, I had a back injury. Our marriage began with me being in constant pain, and the doctors had few answers or relief. Over the next 3 decades, I would experience increasing pain through my body, severe illnesses, including sepsis and Epstein-Barr, and hormone problems resulting in infertility and miscarriages. Between 2000 and 2021, I had constant migraines ranging in severity from bad to horrific. For significant stretches of time, the pain was so bad I spent much time in bed in too much pain to read, watch TV, listen to music. For hours, it was just me and God. He would remind me of truths I had learned, like how we can rejoice in suffering, because suffering produces perseverance, which produces character, which is produces hope. As John and I cried out to God for healing, he began making it apparent that emotional healing was needed, and I sought counseling. And as Jesus brought emotional healing and the physical pain decreased, he enabled me to facilitate classes teaching others how Jesus brings emotional and physical healing. And I was able to comfort others just as Jesus had comforted me. I began to see what Paul meant in a letter he wrote to the Christians in Rome, in the same chapter you referenced. And we know that God causes everything to work together for the good of those who love God and are called according to his purpose for them. One of the passions God gave me was for homeschooling our son James and our daughter Marie. But homeschooling in chronic pain took help. The Lord helped me persevere as people from church and the homeschooling community brought meals and took the kids to classes. There were so many activities and trips I wanted John and I to do with the kids, but chronic pain got in the way. But God is good. And he helped me to treasure time with the kids as we would have one-on-one time without the distractions of busyness. Things were getting better. Then in 2011, I got Epstein-Barr, mono, leaving me extremely weak, sick, and cognitively challenged for the next few years. Homeschooling the kids would have been impossible, but God was prepared. He had guided John and I to have our kids start school the 2 years prior. God has gradually restored much of the strength and cognitive impairment lost from mono and reduced the headaches and back pain. And in 2015, I was able to start working a part-time job in accounting. And I've been working full-time since 2017. In comparison to where I was 10 years ago, this is a miracle. I still have daily pain, but it's far more manageable, and I have hope. At 18 years old, I did not know how much I would need Jesus in the coming decades. But he knew and guided me to trust him. Many times I struggled with being angry at God because I had trusted him with my life, and then things seemed to get worse, much worse. Now I know I would have gone through these same challenges, whether I trusted God or not. But like Nate said last Sunday, God was laying a foundation in my life, a foundation where he built his character, his perseverance, and his hope in me. God has taught me that his plans were not to harm me, but plans to give me hope and a future. He knew I would need my husband, John, to be Christ to me, to show me God's love for me. He knew I would need the love of John and my children to give me the motivation to keep fighting when the physical pain was so unrelenting and extreme, I thought the only way out was to take my life. He knew he wanted me to help others learn how he was bringing emotional and physical healing in their lives. That future has included our kids successfully graduating high school and college and going on to the careers of their choice. I see how God has used my weakness to shape our children into the people he called them to be. My daughter's heart for service and my son's caring nature as a husband and as a father. So if you ask me, where is God in pain and suffering? I will tell you that he is right next to us, holding our hands, crying with us, and bringing his comfort through the people he brings into our life.
Thank you so much for sharing with us.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
And I want to let you know, if any of you have any questions or want to talk, I'll be over in the second pew there after service. Yeah. I'd love to talk and or pray with you.
Thank you so much. This is real life stuff, isn't it? How encouraging is it to know that we find hope in Jesus, and that hope is not just the future hope that we have, as great as that hope is, but it's hope for now, that he's there walking with us. We haven't even begun to address all the questions and conversations, so I just want to put my contact up. If you want to continue any of these conversations, please reach out to me. I might put you in contact with somebody else. I might not be the one that has that conversation, but we don't want to be the kind of place where we just say it on Sunday and then we go about our lives and pretend like it doesn't happen. So, please reach out to me and we can continue kind of talking about these things. So right now, I want to close this in prayer. We've got the song we're going to sing right after this. I think to me, it gives me such hope just about how God works in the midst of all that. So let's pray, and we're going to continue even as we worship together. God, we just thank you that you are searchable, that you are knowable. God, we thank you even that you have a plan, and we long to know it. We long to understand what you're doing, but we trust you with the details that we don't know as well. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you for listening to the Bridges Community Church Sermon Podcast. To watch the video of our entire Sunday gathering, or to find more information about us, please visit our website at bridgescc.org.